All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is Grimm's... No, it's not that. I'm so used to saying Grimm's... I'm so used to saying Grimm's Uncanny Valley, or, you know, because we've been doing that a lot. We've been doing a lot of Grimm's Uncanny Valley this week, because, of course, it's Sextember.
Grimm's Hot Dog Down a Hallway.
But no, Uncanny Valley is.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Just brainstorming. You never know. Could be the next big thing.
Yeah, I don't think people would be interested in that. But anyway, on the Grim Articles show, we've got several older articles. Now, why are we doing older articles? Because look at my screen. You see this? All these up here? I want them gone. And the only way to do that is to do them. So let's go ahead and get it started. So some of these are a little older, but not too old. Like this is June, but this is the oldest we have, I think. So, all right. Anyway, hey, there was a Powerball player that won $1.8 billion jackpot. Wow. I wonder how much the government took of that.
Well, I was going to get some tomorrow next drawing, but I'll wait till it goes back up.
All right. Beware of the Gen Z gaze. Young service workers' refusal to greet customers is setting off older generations. If you've ever walked up to a cashier or front desk and been met with a silent stare, you've been a victim of the Gen Z gaze. I don't have that problem, and I work in customer service. Talk about the Gen Z gaze has been taking over X, with older generations complaining about how kids these days handle customer service jobs. And one post with over 1.7 million views, user I don't care said that they are so sick of the new style of customer service where people just stare at you when you walk up to the counter service desk. The car service guy saying, "Good morning, I'll be with you in a minute," immediately made me start thinking, wow, this is how you run a business, they shared. Oh, by the way, let me fix this. A similar statement, sentiment rather, writing that there is a new phenomenon that when you walk into a food place or coffee shop, they just stare at you and don't say anything first. In response, a user dubbed that stare the Gen Z gaze. While it might not seem like a big deal to initiate conversation as a customer, many shared that being on the receiving end of silence has caused confusion and isn't what is expected from customer-facing roles. The initial poster noted in a follow-up post that they don't expect any special treatment, but how am I supposed to know I'm talking to the right person? How am I supposed to know I'm talking to the right person, or that the person is ready for the interaction and not working on something else if I'm greeted with a blank stare? Another person shared a time they went to the restaurant and were met with a stare from a hostess, and what really is even their job other than to greet you? When they asked for a table for two, the hostess wordlessly led them into the dining room. "Now is she showing me to my table, checking for availability, quitting on the spot?" the person questioned. Why do more and more workers just hit you with a floor-eyed stare like it's unnatural that a customer would walk into a place of business? All at doctors and dentists' front desks, people act like they have no idea why you're there and give a dazed stare like they don't know what a doctor or dentist is. You walk up to a counter or desk and feel like you need to apologize, one noted. Naturally, many service workers who are guilty of the Gen Z gaze defended themselves and reminded the internet that their jobs suck. No disrespect, but if you had to deal with the insane amount of absolutely fucking brain-dead people you've ever met in your life 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, you would do this, and people have been doing this since jobs as a concept were invented, one person wrote on X.
Nope.
I remember the first time a friend of mine told me she didn't think that customers were owed friendliness. Just a mind-boggling mindset, one person shared.
Yeah.
And it's so insidious, I really don't think people realize they're infected with it. Work is so much better for everyone if you're making an effort. It's just mass entitlement. Everyone is suddenly entitled to everything, and they're mad that they have to work those jobs and can't have everything handed to them, another said. I had a lady ask to hug me because I was so nice, and she said it made her so relieved not to deal with negativity for once. I was just being normal, a fellow customer service worker shared. The quality of service is so pathetically low now. It pisses me off so much since I've done these jobs and know there's no excuse. They're extremely coddled people who think they have nothing to lose if they don't like their job, the user who coined Gen Z gaze added. The phenomenon could also be linked to the decline of social and verbal skills. I was just going to say that.
Yep.
In Gen Z.
Too after locked the, on their phone.
Yes, COVID-19 pandemic. A 2024 survey from Preply, an online language learning platform, found that reduced in-person interactions have particularly affected Gen Z, as many were in education during the pandemic. As a consequence of the virtual world, they've missed out on crucial opportunities to both develop and practice their communication skills, Preply said in a press release. The lack of exposure affects their ability to read social cues, engage in spontaneous conversation. I think this shit was all done on purpose. And build interpersonal relationships, Christine Byrne, a public relations executive at Luke AI, told Forbes at the time. One ex-user added to this argument, also blaming the increase in use of modern technology. In general, Gen Z culture doesn't have a norm for greeting and acknowledging people that they don't already know. Their custom is a headphones, eyes down until engagement is required. I think this comes from a combination of screen habituation, chronically staring at something that never looks back at you, social anxiety from lack of practice in the public square, and a new norm around not bothering people, inserting yourself into anyone's social space.
Yeah. No, that...
Well, you work in customer service, too, technically. Yeah,
well, I'm not on my phone all the time, neither, but...
I am, but I can still pay attention to people, because people will always ask me questions.
In these areas, not all areas, like, you're in one of those jobs where you have your own time, and then when people call you, then you...
Yes, when people come to me, yes.
You got to be on the ready, so you can't be on your phone.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. I've had those jobs,
because
too.
Because people like it when you make them feel like they're important.
Absolutely.
And that's what usually leads to more sales and everything else. That's why it's so important. Jobs just need to be firing people that don't.
Keep in mind, I help people find things all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of customers will ask questions. And sometimes it's not that they don't know, it's that they can't see.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are like, I can't read that print. So I will take it and read it to them. And I'll be like, this
you're
is
gonna have some
exactly
dumb questions every once in a while.
That's fine. I mean, but again,
what's dumb to you isn't to the person asking.
Right. You got to understand, like, this woman said she needed a cooler and she wanted something that was going to last all the way to Dallas. Because she's driving to where we were all the way to Texas.
Yeah,
and that's a long way. So she wants to make sure that her food would be cold. And I'm like, you probably have to get one of these little ice packs. And you'd have to get,
you get one of those. It ain't even a Yeti. They have the Arctic ones.
They have the Arctics. The Arctics.
That gray one at Walmart.
Well, see, they had these... what were they called? They had these red ones, and they were on rollback, kind of, right?
It's so, the igloo and all that, shit don't last you.
No, they weren't.
Unless it's one of the refrigerated, very sealed...
Well, there was one for $40, and I was like, that's a little bit much to pay for that. But she says it is very insulated. I said, yeah, but she was also looking at the other one. She wanted to look at every single thing. Like, she asked me a lot of questions. She wanted to ask me how to refill a butane lighter. Just a lot of stuff that she just really didn't know, and a lot of people wouldn't, because when you help a customer out and then they start asking for other things, it's because they really don't know. They don't understand some things, and sometimes they just need that information in general.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
you wouldn't believe, from when I was working at Walmart, people I run into at my job now are like, you sold me a TV. I love that TV. And it works great. I'm so glad I asked for your opinion.
Right. Yeah. And people will do that. People have asked. So one thing you guys don't understand about customer service is people will ask you for your opinion. And that's why I prefer to be in an area where I can give it.
Yeah.
Because I won't give an opinion on something that I don't have any information on.
If I was stuck in an area where I'd need to learn, I would learn it before.
Right. But, I'm a floater. So I'm everywhere.
Yay.
I'm everywhere. So I'm basically, wherever they need me, I'm going to be asked this or that. And I say, if this is transmission fluid, like, I had to help this guy find transmission fluid. And we couldn't find it. And then it's like, hold on. It's like, this is what you want right here. And he said, oh, man, that's it right there. Like, we were looking for everything. He's like, I didn't think we were going to find it. I said, yeah, but there it is. It's like, great, this is what we need. So customers are really happy when you find the thing they want. Because, you know, you got to understand, some people, they're not from around. They're not from around here. Not everybody that comes to this area is from this area. So they don't know where everything is.
We've had people from all over.
All over the world. You know, because you got to understand, in our area, there's a massive casino. Yep. So people come from all over the country and sometimes parts of the world.
It's about to be even bigger.
Yes, because we've got a massive, and they even got they got the letters on it now. They actually got the letters on it,
I
noticed.
It's going to be opening up, I believe, October, November.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's going to get massive over here, guys. There's going to be a lot more noise over.
Convention center.
That is one thing I do want to prepare you guys for, because when we have a massive hotel, like, right next door to my house, it's probably going to get loud. So I don't know how we'll do the shows
we're
and things.
We're still a good drive away.
Yeah, we're still a good drive away, so it shouldn't be that big. But there's still going to be more traffic, and there's going to be a little more craziness going on. But yeah, this is a massive, like, we're not even joking, this is a massive, high-quality hotel. This is, they've got penthouse suites and everything.
Oh, yeah.
So this
is the nicest thing in town.
Yes,
sure.
It's the nicest, it's the biggest building in town.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like the Tower of Babylon in the middle of... It looks like the Tower of Babylon in the middle of nothing. That's literally what it looks like.
A farmer's field.
There's a literal field here. And then there's this giant freaking building that is just massive. And
geese love to hang out around it.
It's crazy how big this thing is.
Deer sometimes be watching you drive by.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Because this is still southern country.
The runoff.
Yeah, this is still southern country, and it's crazy, guys. Okay. So, yeah, we're going to have lots of people from all around the world coming up here, and again, they don't know that some of them don't even really have a good grasp on English. So, you have to really kind of help them through things.
Oh, yeah.
And so that's why people like me are important in my field, because I give a damn. Think about it, guys. You may think it's not important, but when you're going to a place and you're looking for something, you have no fucking idea where anything is, and you need somebody's help, yeah, you would want to be, if you're that person, you want to make sure that person can help you,
yeah,
right? I mean, if I'm walking into a place I've never been in, hey, I need to find this, and this is really important. We don't have much time.
Yeah.
We got to get this now. You know, it's always important. Sure, I'm putting away returns now. You know, I used to work in a warehouse. I did 8 years in a warehouse. But now I'm doing, you know, a more casual kind of job, right? But at the same time, I have to help people. And I really like it because I enjoy helping people. I enjoy, you know, that's part of my job that I enjoy.
Get you to be social?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm very social now when it comes to that. But there's still a lot of people that I notice that aren't very social and still have problems with things. And I mean, it's different generation.
And then I go up to him and say, eat my ass.
She's too hot to hire. A brunette bombshell has been left bereft after interviewing for 50 jobs and failing to find gainful employment.
I doubt that's why she didn't get
Ali Gotcha, 21, has been pounding the pavement looking for a role as a nanny after finishing up a childcare course 3 years ago, but she says she's realized that her curves have drawn more attention than her qualifications. I would go in confident, present my certificates, talk about everything I'd learned, but no one had got back to me, she told Need to Know. At first, I thought it was due to lack of experience, but after so many attempts, I started to believe the reason was something else, the Brazilian beauty added.
Well, I mean, if it's a married couple...
Right. It's going to be some problems. Yeah. Gotcha's good looks may be particularly problematic in the nannying industry, where wary women are reluctant to hire hot help for fear that their husbands might stray.
Not the best looking Brazilian I've seen, but
right.
Good looking. Got a body.
Right. I wanted to show my professional side, but it seemed like no one could see it, the unemployed stunner moaned. The aspiring nanny is seemingly suffering from opposite of pretty
privilege. Maybe that's why she's not getting jobs. She disqualified herself. Oh!
Whereby conventionally attractive people gain financial or social benefits via their appearance.
Stop wearing bikinis to interviews.
Right. However, Gaucha hasn't let her looks go to waste. While job hunting, she began posting pictures online. Sue saw her social media following explode. Now she's making money as a content creator.
Such a fucking moron. What do employers a lot of times do when they're
looking to see if you're on that kind of stuff?
Check your social media.
Mm-hmm.
And a wife's going to go see all those pics, and the husband's like, maybe we should give her a chance. Like,
No, it's not going to happen at all. That's crazy talk.
She's an idiot.
Yeah.
Well, good thing she's got tits and ass to fall back on.
Yeah. As many of them do.
Yep.
Even if I don't practice nannying today, the nanny I once was is still
equal,
with me. She declared, yeah, they aren't. I still
a lot
feel
of asses aren't.
Yeah, connected to that experience because I dedicated myself and prepared for it. On one side, I was looking for stability. On the other, I found freedom. She may be extremely qualified, but one would think her social media exposure would cost her more jobs. People don't realize what information and impression they give away by exposing their life online. We look at social media for all new hires. Finds us tons of info. Keeps clowns like this out of our office.
There you go.
I believe it's because her situation smells like New Delhi. And Bangalore. And Bengaluru. Just another photo op. I thought OnlyFans didn't interview their members. And if she doesn't dress conservatively, forget it. She's not attractive. She's got a good body, but not that good looking. Maybe she didn't get hired is because the potential employers are looking at the same pictures we are in the article. I'm not hiring someone to watch kids who's posting pictures and almost nothing to social media. There's always OnlyFans. They can't get past her gut and cans on her desk.
So shallow I wouldn't date her. But then again, I ain't got a wife and trying to hire a babysitter.
She's extremely hasleech. Has she seen her face in a mirror? Oversized sloppy top half with no firmness is extremely unattractive. Random tattoos that look more like something you get when you're out of your mind on a bender rather than a design of art. Nothing about her is attractive in any form. Maybe employers pick up on her extremely poor attitude. I hope she comes for money. She's going to have a much harder go of things if she's poor. She's below average in every statistic possible. She needs to accept that. She looked like Lizzo in 18 months. 3. I got a side job for her.
Yeah. I mean, I got work. It didn't require a
Once
degree.
Again, a girl with an enormous fat posterior that she somehow believes is attractive. It's sickening. All I can imagine is a huge amount of methane emanating from that thing. When did huge obese backsides become a beauty standard? I agree, this BBL obsession is out of hand. It's, from my standpoint, disgusting. It isn't pretty at all. I like them slim and firm, not lardy. Well, at least you know when she pulls into the driveway. Or the zip code.
I mean, she wasn't bad shape. She's not. I mean, somebody's super picky.
Right. That person, you know.
She's not in bad shape. She's just a little overly confident in why she's not getting hired.
7 Habits of Men Who Have Quietly Lost Their Joy in Life, According to Psychology. Now, this is from Drex. There's a subtle distinction between being content and truly joyful. The divide often goes unnoticed, especially those who've slowly but surely lost their zest for life. These men might seem fine on the surface, but beneath that veneer, their joy is faded into a mere memory. Psychology gives us insights into these quiet transformations, and it's crucial to identify them not only in others, but also in our own lives. Understanding these 7 habits can help us spot the signs and bring back the happiness that may have slipped away unnoticed. In this article, we'll explore the 7 habits of men who have quietly lost their joy in life, according to psychology. Get ready to deep dive into the human psyche and perhaps find a path that leads back to joy. The joyless routine. Life is full of routines. We get up, get ready, go to work, come home, and do it all over again. But when joy has begun to fade, these routines can become chains that bind men to a joyless existence. These men often find themselves stuck in a cycle of repetition, where every day seems to blur into the next. They're just going through the motions, without finding any real pleasure or satisfaction in what they do. For men who have lost their joy in life, the present moment is often a place they'd rather escape from. Recognizing this habit is the first step towards regaining the lost joy. Breaking free from monotonous routines and finding new and engaging activities can reignite the spark that once made life enjoyable. Social withdrawal. I remember when my friend John started withdrawing from our social circle. He was always the life of the party, but suddenly he began declining invitations and spending more time alone. It was a slow change, hardly noticeable at first, but eventually became a habit. Social withdrawal is a common sign of decreased joy in life. This isolation can be self-imposed as an attempt to avoid feelings of discomfort or dissatisfaction. But as Carl Jung once said, loneliness does not come from having no people about one, but from being able to communicate things that seem unimportant to oneself. In John's case, he had lost the ability to share his feelings and connect with others on a deeper level. His joy had faded, replaced by a sense of detached loneliness. If you notice this habit in yourself or someone you care about, remember that reaching out and creating connections can be a powerful antidote to this isolation. Rekindling old friendships, starting new ones, or even seeking professional help can make a world of difference. Disinterest in previously enjoyed activities. Have you ever found yourself losing interest in activities you once thought brought you immense joy? It's a disconcerting feeling, one that creeps up on you without notice. This is a common habit among men who have lost their joy in life. Activities that used to spark excitement now feel dull and uninteresting. The hobbies they used to have somehow lose their appeal. For those experiencing this disinterest, it's tough to see the beauty in the struggle when even their passions feel like chores. If you find yourself in this situation, it might be some time for some introspection. Could be a sign that your joy is taking a back seat and it's time to reclaim it. Remember, joy doesn't just happen, it's a choice you make every day. Constant fatigue. Feeling perpetually tired even after a good night's sleep is another habit of men who've lost their joy in life. Constant fatigue goes beyond mere physical exhaustion. It's emotional and mental tiredness that seems never-ending. It's not just about needing more sleep, but about lack of motivation and interest that drains energy levels. Psychology studies have linked this chronic fatigue to lower levels of life satisfaction. A study published in the Journal of Health Psychology found a strong correlation between chronic fatigue syndrome and decreased life satisfaction. It doesn't surprise me at all. It showed that individuals suffering from this syndrome reported lower levels of joy and satisfaction in their lives. If you're always feeling tired, it might not be your body telling you to rest, but also your mind signaling that your joy is waning. It's essential to pay attention to these signals and address them before they escalate further. Yeah, that's good advice, I think. Neglecting self-care. I've seen firsthand in my own life, during a particularly challenging period, the first thing that went out the window was my self-care routine. I stopped exercising, ate poorly, and neglected my mental health. Neglecting self-care is another common habit among men who've lost their joy in life. When joy fades, so does the motivation to take care of oneself, but this neglect only serves to exacerbate the problem, creating a vicious cycle. Psychologist and philosopher William James once said, "The greatest weapon against stress is our ability to choose one thought over another." When joy is absent, choosing positive thoughts becomes increasingly difficult. If you find yourself neglecting self-care, it may be time to reassess. Prioritizing your own well-being isn't selfish. It's necessary to regain the joy that has quietly slipped away. Overcompensation. Ironically, one habit of men who have lost their joy in life is overcompensation. They might throw themselves into work or hobbies, trying to fill the void left by their decreasing joy with constant activity. But this business is often just a smokescreen hiding their true feelings. Overcompensation is often about avoidance, about not accepting the current state of our emotions. If you find yourself constantly busy, ask whether you're genuinely passionate about your activities or you're just trying to keep busy to avoid confronting your feelings. Recognizing this habit can be the first step towards reclaiming your joy. Final habit of men who have lost their joy in life is a shift towards pessimism. They may start viewing the world through a negative lens, focusing more on the bad than the good. Renowned psychologist Martin Seligman once said, "Pessimism is escapable. Recognizing this habit is the first step towards escaping the pit of negativity. Remember, it's never too late to regain your joy and start seeing the brighter side of life." Final reflections. The human journey is a complex tapestry of emotions, experiences, and habits. Sometimes joy can quietly slip away from our lives, replaced by routine, fatigue, and pessimism. But recognizing these habits is the first step towards reclaiming that lost joy. As we navigate through life, it's crucial to remember that joy isn't a constant state, but a journey of ups and downs. It's about finding contentment in the small moments, breaking free from monotonous routines, reaching out and fostering connections, and above all, choosing joy every day. So take a moment to reflect. Are any of these habits creeping into your life? Is your joy slowly fading away unnoticed? Remember, it's never too late to bring back the joy in your life, because ultimately your happiness is in your hands. Okay, so that's some food for thought there.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Haribo issues major recall. This is old. After popular gummies found to be tainted with cannabis.
What?
Now, unfortunately, this is old news.
Oh.
This cola-flavored candy could have more fizz than you're expecting. Haribo is investigating how one of its popular gummy products apparently became tainted with cannabis in the after several people reportedly fell ill in the Netherlands. Haribo has issued a nationwide recall in the EU country as a result. Customers who were enjoying the Haribo Happy Cola fizz gummies including multiple members of a single family said they felt dizziness after eating the sweets, according to Netherlands Food and Consumer Product Safety Authority. Samples were taken and cannabis was found in them, the agency told Dutch outlet Hart van Nederland. Do not eat the sweets. So far, only a single batch of candy in the Netherlands is suspected of contamination, not supplies in the U.S. or elsewhere. Haribo said it was working with police to investigate the contamination, with the NVWA finding at least 3 packs tainted with weed. Haribo said it was recalling its entire stock in the Netherlands as a precaution, removing all bags with a best before date of January 2026. The company will be also issuing full refunds. The safety of our consumers is our highest priority, and Haribo takes this incident very seriously, which is why a recall has been issued in the Netherlands, the company said in a statement. It remains unclear how many people became sick due to the contaminated batch, with officials noting that no breach occurred with any of Haribo's other candies. Wait. There is zero way it could have been the company unless they processed pot at those facilities where the gummies are made. So is Haribo making pot gummies for other brands? It's possible. My question exactly, does Haribo also make cannabis gummies in addition to non-cannabis gummies? Why would the article not answer this question if they do not do both? And presuming the affected customers aren't lying, it means that there was sabotage. Haribo from Germany are made by Haribo itself. The ones made for others are in a generic plant, not in Germany. It's also possible an employee whipped up a special batch that ended up contaminated other batches. But I would guess that Haribo makes massive batches of candies, thousands of packages. You would need pounds of pot oil to infuse the gummies of a big batch to get them to that level where people felt sick.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that someone used a Haribo bag and put pot gummies in that bag. There has to be more to this story.
Yeah.
No, American Haribo gummies are made in Turkey. That facility has a lot of products. Hold on, guys. Let me get rid of my Discord there. I have a feeling that someone used a Haribo bag and put pot gummies in that bag. For those of you that are curious, because I know we have some nosy Nancys, that is my GOG. That's somebody on my GOG server, okay? I'm in GOG a lot. Obviously, people know that. You see me on X, where I'm constantly trying to promote GOG and, you know, get other developers to come to GOG. So, yeah, I'm on there a lot. But anyway, back to what we were talking about. I have a feeling that someone used a Haribo bag and put pot gummies in that bag. There has to be more to this story. And then he says, no, American Haribo gummies are made in Turkey. That facility does a lot of products. Very interesting. And there was 2 Powerball winners that won the $1.79 billion jackpot. Sports star boyfriend of cheerleader charged with newborn found in trash bag cooperating with cops. Coldplay kiss cam mistress files from divorce from husband. She doesn't seem like wife material. Huh. Okay. Stuff that's not really important. I don't really care to talk about the baby in the trash. It's some young football guy, and he's like, I don't have time for this shit.
I thought they all go to trash.
Right. 19 women are opening up about the exact moment they realize their significant other was controlling them and is starting an important conversation about power dynamics and relationships. So, let's see the complaints, okay? Let's just look at the complaints. Let's give these ladies some... Let's see what they have to say, all right? So we're not going to worry about this. That's why the R Ask Women, which means it's Reddit, and it could be real and could not be real. But it says, at what moment did you realize this isn't love, this is control? I was 21, and I asked if I could go on a weekend trip with a few girlfriends. My partner didn't say no, but sulked for days, made passive-aggressive comments, and guilt-tripped me until I canceled. You know why, right? Yeah, what the women go do. Out and
fuck everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
And the worst enemy a woman has is their friends.
Yep.
A lot of times. Now, I'm not saying all, but for the most part.
Right.
Women are jealous of other women's success.
Yes. Very and that much.
That includes best friends.
Oh, yeah. And friends do shit. Like, I had these two girls today come up to me. And they said, are you maintenance? Or I said, no. And I said, well, tell this. Make sure maintenance knows that this girl had really explosive diarrhea. It was like, what? They were saying that their friend was in the bathroom with really explosive diarrhea trying to get her. Like, they will do, yeah, girls will do rough shit to other girls, trust me. That night, my dad, I said, no.
Well, guys do that to guys.
Yeah, I know, that's true. That's true.
But, and it's not usually about getting them to cheat on their spouse.
Right, but that shit does happen as they get older. That night, my dad called and asked how the trip went. I told him I didn't go. He was quiet for a second. By the way, those girls were young, and they wore stuff that I would not let any daughter of mine prance out of this fucking house with.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have something that's exposing your belly button like that. Not at your age. They were dressed like tramps. I'm sorry. I know there's some ladies that watch this, but look, guys. I can't do it. Because it really sets your kids up to be a target. If you've got your young girls dressed like that,
yeah.
I don't care what the fashion is. I don't care what's popular. That's a little girl. You don't make her look like an appetizer.
Don't make her look like an adult.
Yeah, you don't make her an appetizer. That's literally what these. That's what these guys are going to look at. Oh, I want some. You really? And you'll get the worst kinds of people. The worst kinds of people.
Yeah, they come out of the woodwork.
They take pictures. There's so many things they can do now.
Yeah.
Your kids will be all over the internet, and it's your fault because you took. I know how teenagers can be. But mom. Yeah, but you have to put your foot down and say no. You're not dressing like that.
Yeah.
This girl wasn't even a teenager yet. You don't. No, that's not going to happen. That night, my dad called and asked how the trip went. I told him I didn't go. He was quiet for a second. Then he said, love doesn't keep you from being yourself. It protects that part of you. It hit me like a freight train.
And her dad needs to shut the fuck up. He's ruining a relationship, too. Because it ain't about that. The husband knows.
Right.
Because and deep down, if her dad thought about it, yeah.
I thought
he wouldn't let his wife go at that age.
Right. I thought love meant compromise, but I slowly started being myself to keep the peace. I started making my way out of that night. 2, when I started going to therapy and taking medication, he said, what if you feel better and you don't love me anymore? You mean, what if I'm finally healthier? He would go from, you're toxic and the relationship isn't healthy, to, oh no, please don't get well, because then I'll be the sick one and you'll stop putting up with my shit.
See, and she just fucking nuts in the head.
We broke up 3 months later, but should have ended things prior. As high school sweethearts for a decade, we had become codependent and afraid of dating again. I've been telling myself, no one else will know me the same. No one else will love all the bad parts of me. Little did I know, many of those bad parts started to die off when I was finally allowed to grow.
When she went whoring around?
Yep. We had been seeing each other for nearly a year when we began to talk about meeting each other's parents and families. He knew my family was abusive and that I never wanted to introduce a partner to them. Yet he spent a whole day trying to convince me that my relationship with my family could be repaired and that I wasn't serious about our relationship.
Listen to that. She was talking about she took advice from her dad and talks about
this is another woman.
Another one?
That was woman one. This is woman two.
Oh, okay.
This is woman three. Sorry.
I was about to blow the fuck
up.
Yeah.
He spent a whole day trying to convince me that my relationship with my family could be repaired and that I wasn't serious about our relationship if I didn't want him to meet them. I stayed awake that entire night trying to think of every possible scenario that could happen if I introduced him to them. When he woke up the next morning, I told him I had figured out a plan that might work. He replied that he'd only been joking and mocked me for taking him seriously. He also was mad at me for stressing about it and losing sleep, which meant I was too tired to cook and clean for him that day. 4. When I realized the only way our relationship was peaceful was if I got rid of everyone in my life. He hated my female friends, my male friends, my family, my coworkers, and even the people I sat next to in school or in a classroom setting or on a bus.
Now that's probably...
That's bad.
Bad. Or opposites. They're so opposite.
Right.
They shouldn't attract.
Right. One time, a professor told me in front of the entire class that her abusive husband wouldn't let her go to the emergency room when she needed to because she was afraid the doctor would be a man. Later that year, my partner berated me for having a male gynecologist. I broke up with him a few months after that. We got together again because he promised he'd change. But then he started nagging me about my classmates needing my phone number for a group... pardon me, project. It's my last straw, and I realized it had never been about me. 5. When... text me when you get there so I know you're safe turned into I know you're with your friends, but show me your pretty face. It eventually became text me a picture weird. Of the restaurant salt shaker and you holding up 3 fingers right now.
That's weird.
6. I had to be careful not to show any sentimental attachment to my belongings because if he knew I liked something, he would break it in a rage so I wouldn't have it anymore.
And we are only hearing one half of this story.
That is true. He tried to get me...
The other one, like, he probably haven't... She probably did something to lose his trust.
That is true. I had to be careful not to show any sentimental attachment to my belongings, because if he knew I liked something, he'd break it in a rage, so I wouldn't have it anymore. Huh. He tried to get me to take him back once by saying he was sorry and that he only breaks stuff when he gets mad because he can't help it. I asked him, how come you never broke your own stuff?
Yeah. I wouldn't hang around someone like that.
Right, that's dangerous. I realized it years after my partner and I had broke up. I was reading a book or watching something, and everyone was talking about the character being abused. I remember thinking, no, she isn't. That happened to me. Then I realized how lucky I was that I escaped. I opened my eyes about abuse and why women often can't leave. It clicked when I realized I was constantly scared to disappoint my partner. I felt like I couldn't do normal things without worrying about how they would react, whether it was texting friends, wearing something they didn't like, or having my own opinion. It wasn't love, it was control dressed up as care. I'd say it's because they loved me, but it always came with guilt or silent treatment if I didn't do what they wanted. Mm-hmm. That's when I realized love doesn't make you feel small or scared. Real love doesn't come with conditions. When I told him I wanted a divorce, he said I couldn't make that decision on my own because I wasn't qualified and couldn't change all of our lives just because I wanted to, so I had to see a couples therapist with him. Mind you, I begged him for years to go to couples therapy, but he refused. Even though I told him I wasn't going, he made us an appointment and kept CCing me on passive-aggressive emails to the therapist. I'm so glad I stood my ground and refused to go. I started seeing my own therapist and learned about power control and emotional abuse. My life is so much better than it was before. That's from Feed Me Tacos. It was our anniversary and traveled 2 hours to see him so we could spend it together. We had a date night plan and I brought gifts. When I arrived, he didn't have any gifts and told me he wanted to see a DJ set with his friends instead of having dinner with me. I was upset and started crying. He told me I was being dramatic and that he was still going out with his friends. I went to the bathroom to cry and came to the conclusion that I still wanted to have a nice night, so I called my best friend and asked if she wanted to go to see a film. She said, yeah. So, when he started getting ready to leave for the DJ set, I told him I was going to spend the evening with my friend. He flipped out and told me it was rude of me to make other plans without telling him, and that I should have asked to see him to see the film. That's when something clicked. He was allowed to cancel on me and ditch me, but he still wanted to control what I did. He hated that I took initiative and made alternative plans for myself.
He probably went behind and canceled with the guys. And then he said, I'll make plans. And then she made plans.
Yeah.
I know how this shit works.
This is going to... Well, you know, but at the same time, he'd already made plans first.
Yeah, I'm joking.
Right. I know that.
It could...
This is going to age me. But I found him using my AOL Instant Messenger account to message my best friend stuff like, you're such a bitch for dumping Justin. He always hated her and saw an opportunity to end our friendship. 12. When my ex mentioned that I, a college first year, was taking 19 hours of classes, need to be financially independent from my family despite them not financially supporting me in the first place. He suggested we get a credit card and bank account together. Eventually, I put the pieces together and realized he wanted to track where I was and how I spent my money. Looking back, yeah, things had taken a downturn long before that. He always insisted on dropping me off and picking me up from my classes every single day. At first, I thought it was a kind gesture, so I didn't have to trek up the hills on campus. Now I realize he wanted control over my schedule, including when and where I went, and these are just the subtle things. 13. We're both 22 and decided to move across the country together. It started out fine. He did everything I wanted. Then he wouldn't let me work or decorate. He wouldn't buy a car for me to use. He got mad if I went for a walk or talked to the neighbors. I got a job anyway, and that intensified his behavior. He wouldn't mow the lawn and argued that it wasn't overgrown. It was 11.5 inches tall when he measured it. He measured it? We received a fine when it reached a foot, but he argued against it. During that time, he also received a ticket for tailgating, but refused to take ownership of his fault. I think this is a cultural family. Because this sounds like a cultural thing to me. Sometimes people from different cultures have, like, you know... If I made dinner and left it for him to heat up, he would call me at work or come into my office and ask if he should remove the plastic wrap before putting it in the oven. He was the master of weaponizing competence. A final straw was that we needed a new muffler on our car. I could hear him coming home from a mile away because the old one was worn out. Instead of buying and replacing the muffler, he waited 7 months to give me a new one for my birthday. I didn't get to drive that car yet. It was my birthday gift. It took him another 3 months to work on it. I left the day after he finished installing it. And she says financially secure is her name.
Right. Wait for him to do all the work, and then right. She reaps the reward.
He promised, she probably did more than that when she divorced him and took all that money. Ooh, he promised me I could...
He this car with this nice new muffler.
He promised I could go to the mall with a friend to buy some new makeup. But 2 days later, the makeup he'd chosen for me showed up in the mail. Then, when I mentioned how much it bothered me, he yelled at me for being ungrateful. All while I was laid up in bed with an injury. When he wanted me, at 30 years old, to tattoo his name on my hand because when I was 19, my ex-girlfriend and I got each other's initials tattooed. The fact that I had a life before him became a massive problem because he had to know every single detail about it, even though it was perfectly okay. He had a past and didn't tell me much about it. Everything I told him became a weapon to control me in fights. Thankfully, my ex-partner showed himself dramatically and early. After 7 months of dating, we were with a group of friends when I mentioned a local protest. He got so hung up on one detail, I didn't know he lost it. He decided the protest was fake and kept demanding that I learn the detail I didn't know. The exact number of days the protests had been happening. He got himself so upset that when I said I wasn't going to research it, he curled into the fetal position and cried.
I will say, most protests are bullshit.
But they're not worth getting into the fetal position and crying about.
Oh no, that's gay.
When he asked for a break, I told him it would be permanent. 17. I wasn't allowed to be suspicious of him or his behavior, even after he proved he was perfectly okay with lying to me.
Well, you already found out he was in the men. He's crawled in the fetal position.
She's now, like, this is a different girl.
Man, all these girls.
I was supposed to be able to talk about my feelings as part of healing from his lies. But when I would tell him I felt like he was keeping something from me, he'd get angry, glare, and yell. For some reason, I woke up the last time he did it. While I was crying in my safe place in the house, I realized how toxic our... You have a safe place in the house that already shows that things are fucked up.
He was probably justified beating her if he needed to.
There's more, but no, I try not to think about it.
It's so... That's what I call the woke shoe. I just grab it and wail on her.
The silent treatment and snide comments. He constantly acted like I didn't mean anything to him. So I went from being secure to an absolute mess. After going out with drinks with a friend, I returned to his place a little late. So he ignored me to the point I burst into tears.
After hitting her, I say, "You're canceled."
I was confusing because I felt he wouldn't care if I was there or not in general. But he was still trying to guilt me for being late. I'm mostly over it, but I sometimes feel an unresolved surge of anger towards him. I'm glad I eventually decided to leave him, and I never looked back. 19. This is the last girl. When I first moved into our apartment, I had a habit of locking the deadbolt when I was home alone, just for security. But one day, my partner came home from work and couldn't open the door, so he knocked and I let him in. Afterwards, he asked if I could stop locking the deadbolt when he was out. That made sense to me. I'd been in the position before. Why can't he just get a key? Oh, well, yeah, the deadbolt. Yeah, you have a key, you still can't get in. It's annoying to be locked out and have to wait for someone to open the door, especially when it happens more than once. So I told him I would. It wasn't a big deal, and I wanted to be thoughtful. I adjusted and broke the habit. A few weeks later, I came home and the deadbolt was locked, so I knocked and waited. Eventually, he opened the door, and I gently reminded him of the conversation we've had. Okay, so that's his fault. That's on him.
Yeah, that
if you're telling her, I don't like it when you do the deadbolt.
Out of all the stories, this is the one I'm like, yep, that's on him.
That's on him. Because he's like, okay, so you told me that you didn't want the deadbolt. So I'm like, okay, fine, I'll use a key. But now you're putting the deadbolt. And if you don't think,
all those other stories without the man's perspective could be misconstrued.
But there's also some that were legit. Abuse.
Yeah, there was a couple.
There was a couple of legit abuse.
There was a couple, but there was a lot.
There's a lot that could be.
At when a woman says he beat me, it meant like he put his hand on me wrong.
Right, that could happen. Yeah, that's true. That's a very real thing.
Yeah.
A few weeks later, I came home.
Very real thing.
And the deadbolt was locked, so I knocked and waited. Eventually, he opened the door and I gently reminded him of the conversation we'd had, and he asked if I could try to not to lock it while I was out. That's when he told me, it's not like someone's chasing you. I'm right there. I can just unlock it. So you don't like it when it's locked on you, but when she says, hey, you're like, well, blah, 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 blah. That's his fault. The difference between his request and mine was striking. I listened, understood, and changed when he asked me to stop, yet I was met with defensiveness, condescension, and dismissal when I asked him to do the same thing. Suddenly, it wasn't about the inconvenience or the practical reason he'd originally offered. It was about how unnecessary my concern was and how dramatic I must be to even bring it up. At face value, it's just a lock, but in that moment, it became something else entirely. The deadbolt represented autonomy, a sense of safety, and boundary. So when I agreed to stop using it for his comfort, I was being considerate. When I realized the truth, I could see our relationship for what it truly was.
He might have made a mistake and accidentally. You never know. But I've known women to to lie and make the truth sound way worse than it actually was. And that's not gaslight. That's just hearing their side of the story and then seeing what actually happened.
I'm 65 and learned the hard way that when your significant other says, if you love me, you'll do this for me, is the biggest form of manipulation. That's anybody, man or woman. If you ever hear that from anyone who claims to love you, turn around and run as fast as you can and never look back.
Well,
you'll be saving yourself and your sanity.
If you love
me, you'll
be faithful.
Well, that's expected of marriage.
Oh, I found a kink in the armor.
That's expected of marriage.
Yeah,
but
well,
it also depends. It also depends on the terms of the relationship.
And a lot of the women say, "Oh, it's good to be faithful until you cross me."
Right.
And you know, some men might. But I think nowadays men are probably more faithful than women are. And that's just my opinion.
Your comment is appropriate for couples where one or other is on the autism spectrum. For couples who don't always want to communicate literally, a bit of playful irony is fun. It can be until it's not, and you shouldn't generalize about autistic people. They have the same feelings everyone else has. They're not stupid. They're not easily manipulated. Saying fancy words doesn't change the fact it's manipulation, buddy. No, it's not a fact it's manipulation. Get some people at a bad time at the hands of a narcissist, but that doesn't mean... So he's basically saying we do that playfully. I say that to my wife, but it's tongue-in-cheek, said with over-the-top emotion.
She and of knows course they what's got... going on.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, yeah, but you have to understand, some of these people in comment sections are actually...
all they have.
Well, they're damaged. They're damaged goods. Though, sometimes. Like, they literally have been in situations
sometimes
where
their brain's what makes them damaged.
That's true, though. Jaws did what no movie could do today. It made the entire world terrified of the water. It's true. Jaws, which hit theaters 50 years ago next Friday, remember, this is old, is known for making many slashes. As the first hit for 27-year-old Steven Spielberg, the man who'd go on to become one of Hollywood's all-time greatest directors. And the innovative 1975 horror film is considered one of the earliest blockbusters. An estimated one-third of Americans went to see it. Those are super bold numbers. There's composer John Williams' dun-dun score that everyone can hum in the classic ad-lib line, "We're gonna need a bigger boat," that everyone can recite.
Candygram.
Yep. But my favorite feat of Jaws is that the monster movie had such a powerful bite when it was released that it made the masses terrified to so much as dip a toe in salty water for months, years. No major films come anywhere close to that kind of impact today. Sure, Barbie got groups of friends to get dolled up in pink frocks, and Minecraft pushed a few idiots to trash theaters for kicks on TikTok, but Jaws actually changed how people live their lives. During the summer of 75, the Post wrote a lot of stories about the shark scare along the southern coast of Long Island from East Cog to Fire Island that was touched off by the movie version of Peter Benchley's Jaws. Jaws was set in the fictional Long Island town of Amity. Suddenly the real place was Sharksville, USA. This one's a real doozy. In August of that year, we reported that two police officers off a boat on Jones Beach encountered a 10 to 14 foot long shark and started to open fire into the ocean. 15 rounds killing the fish. Imagine watching that unfold from your folding chair. Everybody clapped, but when we left, they were still standing on the shoreline, one cop said of the Jaws-struck crowd. You know, the wannabe Roy Schneider added, if it weren't for that movie, this wouldn't be such a big deal. But boy, was it. Scientists believe Jaws caused an entire generation to develop an irrational fear of sharks. They dubbed it the Jaws effect. And the fin phobia expanded far away from New York State. That same month in Carolina Beach, North Carolina, a tourism chief bemoaned, "We feel this movie is adversely affecting our coastal economy." Films can still hurt local economies today, of course. Snow White did because nobody went to see it. The reverberations of 1970 smashes such as Jaws, The Exorcist, and Star Wars were enormous beyond what we can imagine now. I'm wearing an Exorcist shirt right now. Take the ingenious demonic possession picture. One shaken man who saw The Exorcist in 73 broke 3 ribs during a screening. He's not sure how it happened. Ticket buyers were vomiting in their seats. A theater in Boston kept a stockpile of smelling salts to wake up patrons who fainted.
That's crazy.
William Friedkin's landmark film went on to become a huge factor in the satanic panic of the 1980s, which saw thousands of unsubstantiated claims of satanic ritual abuse ripple across America. Back then, blockbusters also rocked the Oval Office. When President Reagan announced his 1983 Strategic Defense Initiative, a plan to use futuristic technology to prevent a nuclear attack, the press jokingly nicknamed it Star Wars. The moniker stuck. I'm pretty sure we won't be reading about the Lilo and Stitch Law anytime soon. Obviously, the world is different. Monoculture, entertainment, that is true. Monoculture, it's very interesting how the world has changed from monoculture, which means entertainment that's experienced by everybody, no longer exists. We're inundated by niche fare and saltine retreads. Maybe a movie just can't pack the social punch that one could 50 years ago. Then again, no one expected Jaws to explode the way it did. More likely, production went 100 days over schedule, nearly $6 million over budget. Some thought its director would never work again. But the next time you sprint out of the water screaming because that fin you saw turned out to be a cute little dolphin, blame Spielberg. Much like The Exorcist gave many a nightmare or two after viewing, Jaws had us all thinking twice when we went to Jones Beach that summer. 1975 was a watershed year. I didn't want to go into the pool after watching that movie. I saw Jaws at the theater as a middle school kid. My aunt took my older brother and I to see it. The following summer, we were at Padre Island, and we were swimming around in water too deep to touch bottom when someone suddenly on the beach started screaming, "Shark!" And we saw this man get attacked and severely injured by a big bull shark as we desperately swam for shore. I've not gone deeper than knee-deep in any ocean since.
And usually that's where the attack's in, like, knee-deep.
Yeah. I was 14 years old and saw it in the old movie theater in town. Saw it in the balcony, sat on the balcony, and we were terrified. No one went into the water that summer. It was terrifying. I remember leaving the theater with my older brother, and it was so hard for my brain to make sense of the cars, the sunlight, and being safe. Saw Alien in NYC, and people actually ran out of the theater. That's my favorite movie, but I can't deny the impact Jaws had on the entire country. I doubt anyone even got into a tub for a year or so.
You know what movie I saw where people ran out? Bad Santa. Everyone brought their kid to see
it. Oh, wow. Me and my friend
were the only ones that didn't have kids with us. And by 5 minutes into it, me and my buddy were the only ones in the theater. I mean, it went from packed theater to completely empty.
Patrick Schwarzenegger ties the knot with model Abby Good Champion. Movie. Let's see, Jennifer Lopez.
You know, the first 5 minutes of it, he says fuck like 20 times. It's fucking alert. He can hear.
Oh, don't forget about this. Inside Dubai's Alcatraz, Mia O'Brien will spend her life. Former British inmates who endured confinement, notorious Alawiris, a mixed prison. This is a mixed prison in Dubai. She got it because she was an influencer that had the drugs on her. Remember that?
Yeah, you know the rape's out of control there.
Mm-hmm. Shrinkflation. Yeah, they're saying that the McDonald's prices have gone crazy.
They're ridiculous.
Yeah, they're very expensive now. It's not.
Worse.
It's terrible. It's not worth it. So this is a Daily Mail Plus, but it was divorced father of 144 found dead after only drinking beer for an entire month.
Yeah.
You shouldn't do that.
No, you shouldn't.
I've had so much lip filler, I have trouble breathing and can't close my mouth, but I have no plans to stop. And, of course, that's Daily Mail Plus.
Someone's an idiot.
So we can't read that. Why Gen Z isn't fun anymore? Well, we talked about this. We did this one already.
Why aren't we fun anymore?
We're not Gen Z.
Yeah.
Ozzy Osbourne wasn't just a music god. His legendary DNA helped science evolve. The rock and roll legend's genome showed he's genetically predisposed to hard partying. The late Ozzy Osbourne was able to see his musical legacy celebrated in a final farewell concert just a few days before his passing. It was an amazing concert. Yeah. The heavy metal god sat upon a throne and sang his iconic hits to an adoring crowd one final time, but the breadth of his impact on the world might be wider than many realize. He also made a significant contribution to scientific research. Seriously. Nowadays, just about anyone can get their genome sequenced. In doing so, they can learn a lot about their genetic history, biological traits, and even what they might be predisposed to, from diseases like cancer to addiction. But 15 years ago, genome sequencing was much rarer. According to Osbourne's own account in the Times of London, only about 200 people had their genome sequenced when he was initially approached about having his own genes analyzed. That short list, including luminaries like Nobel Prize winner James D. Watson, and MacArthur Fellow Henry Louis Gates Jr. These initial sequencing efforts help inform our early understanding of what is now a massive industry that, at its best, helps those who get their genomes sequenced make informed decisions about their health. The hope was to add the Prince of Darkness Ozzy Osbourne to that prestigious group. Osbourne, according to his own account, initially didn't like the sound of it. I'm a rock star, not brain of Britain, he wrote in 2010. The only gene I know anything about is the one in KISS. But the man who approached Osbourne with the proposition retorted that the rock star's genes could offer something important to the scientific community and contribute to our understanding of how some people seem downright invulnerable to vices that are otherwise wildly destructive. Osbourne was admittedly curious himself how he'd survived such an intense lifestyle and also hoped to get a better understanding of the Parkinson's-like tremor he had begun to experience. And of course, that plagued his final years, reportedly causing 5 years of hell. As reported at the time by the MIT Technology Review, Osbourne's blood was collected in 2010, of July of 2010, by the St. Louis company Coal Factor Genomics, which handled the initial genome sequencing. The data was then sent to Genome Inc. in Cambridge to be analyzed. In October that year, Scientific American spoke with Gnome's Director of Research, Nathan Pearson, to get at the heart of their findings. If you think about what makes Ozzy unusual, Pearson said in explaining their focus, it said he's a world-class musician. He has an addictive personality. He has a tremor. He's dyslexic. He gets up very early in the morning. And many of these can be traced back to the nervous system. When they owned in, they noticed some variants that even in 2010 seems to suggest, if not fully confirmed, some explanation for these qualities. One variant involves a gene that makes CLTCL1, which is a really interesting protein. When a cell takes in things from the outside membrane, it pulls itself in like a basket to pull things in. It does this in all kinds of cells, including nerve cells. He has two copies of an unusual variant that makes a grossly different version of the protein that most people produce. excuse me, it makes a grossly different version of the protein than most people produce. He's a gene, excuse me, here's a gene that's central to how nerve cells communicate with each other, so it's curious to us to see how grossly different protein variant. It's thought-provoking. As one example, Pearson pointed to alcohol dehydrogenase genes, the genes involved in breaking down the alcohol we consume. Osborne, they found as an unusual variant near one of his alcohol dehydrogenase genes, ADH4, that helped regulate how much of the protein gets made. They concede, however, that at the time of the interview, they were unaware of exactly how the variant impacted the musician's alcohol composition. Consumption, rather, specifically. That said, as far back as 2006, this gene had been known to have some impact on alcohol dependency. As Osborne would playfully remark in his op-ed, another thing Dr. Nathan found is that I'm part Neanderthal. That won't come as much of a surprise to the missus or various police departments around the world. Admittedly, by today's genome sequencing standards, these 2010 results feature a notable amount of admissions of we still don't know, which speaks to how much the field has grown in the last 15 years. But it was early studies like the Osborne analysis that, through both expanding the data set and raising public awareness of the possibilities whole genome sequencing offered, helped create the foundation of our modern gene analysis field. Now, sure, there are people who have had perhaps a larger impact on the field of genetics, folks like Gregor Mendel, or M.S. Swaminathan, but could any of them have also written Bark at the Moon? No. So point goes to Ozzy. Interesting. Gen Z women abuse stimulants and binge drink more than any other group. Study's fine. Gen Z women are abusing stimulants and binge drinking more than their male counterparts in any other age group. New studies have found. Nearly 37% of women ages 18 to 25 reported excessively popping uppers such as Adderall and Ritalin in the past year, more than double that reported by women older than them, according to a study published last month in JAMA Psychiatry. Well, I'll be damned. Only 25% of women ages 26 to 34 reported improper use, according to the study. Women 35 to 64, researchers said, have seen the largest rise in stimulant prescriptions, are abusing them the least, 13.7. Men were not far behind women in the abuse of the drugs, which have become so increasingly popular since 2020 that there have been national shortages. Among men ages 18 to 25 who prescribed the medication, 36.1% reported misuse compared to 36.3% of men ages 26 to 35 and 22% of men ages 35 to 64. Of the 83,762 men and women ages 18 to 64 included in the study, only a quarter of them reported misusing the drugs, including taking them without being prescribed or taking a higher or more frequent dose than orders. Frequent doses than ordered. Sorry. While older women often pop the pills to manage daily life and families, many younger women suffer feelings of inadequacy for not meeting social, physical, career, and relationship standards, experts say. There's a pressure to have perfect grades, perfect body, be super popular on social media, and appear to have it all figured out, Stacey Ross, a mental health specialist at Addiction Resource, told The Post. Some feel like they need to be on constantly, and the misuse of stimulants seems like a quick solution to stay there, Ross said. The study's authors said the findings highlight a need for prevention and intervention. They looked at the two types of drugs most commonly used to treat ADHD and with concentration and alertness. Amphetamines, which include Adderall and Vyvanse, and methylphenidates like Ritalin and Concerta. Amphetamines, which stimulate the dopamine reward system more than methylphenidates, were found to be abused 3 times higher. Didn't know that. Okay, women were historically misdiagnosed and underdiagnosed with ADHD, but the gender gap has been closing, especially since the pandemic, according to experts. The alarming findings follow reports that young women are also out drinking men for the first time. A study published last week in JAMA of 267,843 men and women 18 and older found that 31.6% of women ages 18 to 25 reported binge drinking, consuming 4 or more drinks on occasion, more than any other group. The study compared men and women's habits over time periods from 2017 to 2019 and 2021 to 2023, and found that men's binge drinking levels plummeted nearly 8 percentage points from 37.7 to 29.9, but women didn't see such a drop, falling only 4.8% from prior years. Experts say heavy alcohol use has become more acceptable for women and that they are increasingly targeted through marketing and social media campaigns, especially those with higher socioeconomic status. For females, there continues to be pressure to be fun, cool, or relaxed, and too often that means drinking, Ross said. The disturbing findings come amid an increase in alcohol-related liver disease and mortality among young and middle-aged women and men. Of course, no one else can stand them, and they can't stand themselves. Being a victim is hard work and it's tiring. Crying and whining and beating up inanimate objects and rioting and protesting is a lot of work, okay? Sheesh. Lovely. Future mothers. You can tell. They root for... they would talk about Luigi. Okay. What's the next one? We got... Flip phone summer. Gen Z vows to resurrect low tech before their brains turn to mush. Gen Z is flipping the script on the season. Hanging up their addictive call to smartphone, tweens, teens, and 20-somethings are instead going retro, ditching their digital devices for 2000s-era flip phones. Flip phone summer, declared Makalaya Aubrey, posing with a throwback artifact in a trending clip. Life will be so simple. It's an ease that comes with less time on screens. The Z's, youngsters under age 27, have recently begun rehabbing their high-tech fixations with the help of low-tech tools. It's a generational effort towards disconnecting from the World Wide Web and reconnecting with the real world in old-fangled ways. Foregoing iPhone photo shoots, Gen Zers are virally all in favor of snapping pics on vintage digital and disposable cameras, insisting that a camera from 2007 gives off a certain vibe that something like an iPhone can't produce. The whippersnappers are, too, preferring cassette tapes and vinyl records over music streaming platforms and Walkman headphones over ultra-modern Bluetooth earbuds. I'm not really seeing a lot of that. The newfound fascination with Y2K-style horns, however, started with BlackBerry. Nicknaming the once-in-demand devices dumb phones, owing to their unique keyboards and limited capabilities, Zoomers have been zooming to sites like Facebook Marketplace and eBay, purchasing BlackBerries to supplant their more sophisticated cellulars. Now as flip phones rise from the ashes of the hot month's hottest commodity, Gen Zs are crediting the vintage mobiles for restoring their grip on reality. It's an unplugged summer. Many who admittedly spent 13 hours staring at screens each day announced in the caption of a TikTok clip. I swear that my brain is just mush, she said, blaming her smartphone, its luring apps and constant notifications for the regression. I no longer live my life, continued the brunette. I just watch other people live theirs and feel shitty about mine. Many went on to laud her aughts flip phone, along with the old-timey ebook reader praising the resurrected gadgets from saving her from sure destruction. I love the freedom. Everything old is new again. Just like in the 70s when newly married boomers discovered the beauty of Depression-era glass and Fiesta ware, when our parents had discarded over the years and we were finding at flea markets and yard sales. I remember them fondly as a weekend rite of passage. Does this apply to 1,000 people out of millions? A smartphone is a great tool. Weather maps, general information, streaming music, and usually decent cameras. The problem is the obsession with all social media forums, which can use up hours of each day. I mean, you have to wonder exactly. I mean, this is just some people on TikTok. That doesn't really show everybody. Okay, so yeah, that is the same article I tried to read before. The hunting genre was because of Walmart. Doom dev John Romero says the entire category was created to appease one Texan executive. In the latest episode of Night Dive Studio podcast series, legendary FPS developer John Romero came on to talk about the industry, past and present. He ended with a surreal anecdote about the inception of the Deer Hunter series, and thus hunting sims as we know them. Back in the 90s, Walmart had a ton of power in the industry, because tons of people went to Walmart to buy their games, physical games in boxes and everything, said Romero. And to get to Walmart, you had to go through GT Interactive. I didn't know that. GT was a legendary PC publisher that, through a string of acquisitions and corporate maneuvering, became the version of Atari Active in the industry today, the one that now owns Night Dive. I didn't know that. Luckily for Romero, GT had long worked with and favored id Software, leading to its inside track to get on store shelves and Romero's inside scoop on Deer Hunter. Romero said that Walmart's primary buyer at the time was an executive based in Texas who effectively outsourced gaming decisions to GT Interactive. Or in Romero's words, he basically told the publisher, "We don't know nothing about software, so that's why we want GT to do this." After I don't know how many years they had been meeting, the buyer goes, you know, I don't know how to play any of these space alien games, whatever stuff you're putting on the shelf, said Romero. I just want a deer hunting game. You make one of those and I guarantee you'll sell out. And GT goes, you got it. Developer WizardWorks, which had been acquired by GT, was tasked with fulfilling this demand. It would make the sim Deer Hunter, which would become a long-running PC series. While Duck Hunt on the NES preceded Deer Hunter by 13 years, I'd argue it's more arcadey, an evolutionary dead end rather than an antecedent. Big Buck Hunter, which you've probably seen at a restaurant or arcade, first released in 2000, 3 years after the first Deer Hunter game. So this sequence of events certainly makes sense with the timeline of the genre. The hunting genre was because of Walmart, Romero concluded. In the same episode, Romero also expressed that he thinks indies are the future of the game industry. They are.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's not why they were created. We had hunting games in arcades that had nothing to do with the Walmart executive. Hunting games didn't appear in arcades for almost a decade after Deer Hunter was released.
Yeah.
Yep. I was working at EA at the time. You would not believe the panic that Deer Hunter created there. Bubba's got a computer.
That's terrible.
That's
part of the...
That's the problems that we have.
I went to a church trip back in high school to St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And we showed up at this one shopping area and there's a beauty competition. We were talking to the girls and they... found out we were from Arkansas. Arkansas. That's fine. And they thought we didn't wear shoes and all kinds of stuff. They were so shocked.
Wow. So, he says, John's story is basically correct. I was a producer at GT Interactive back then, and yes, Deer Hunter exists because an exec at Walmart wanted it. We didn't have any expectations before it launched that it would be so wildly successful. But it was. Yeah, that's crazy. And this guy's like, Bubba's got a computer? They didn't know that. They didn't know that Southern people had this kind of thing. And to be absolutely fair, I will tell you something, guys. This is real. When I went to high school, there were so many people that didn't have a computer and didn't even know how to turn one on. They had no...
That was a long time ago.
Yes,
that was back before computers were really...
I know that, but I'm just saying that there was a time where, yes, this was indeed the case. So, woman attacked driver that hit and killed chicken that was crossing the road, per police. In Florida, a woman who stopped at an intersection to allow a chicken to cross the road allegedly attacked another driver with bear mace for speeding by her and killing the bird. According to an arrest record obtained by Law and Crime, 38-year-old Cynthia Sosa stopped at an intersection on July 9th to let a chicken cross the road, when another driver began honking at her and later passed her, running over the chicken. Sosa reportedly pursued the driver out of frustration about the chicken's death. Upon catching up on the stopped driver, Sosa allegedly blocked the road in front of the victim's vehicle, got out of her car, and attempted to open their door. They began fighting over the door, the report allegedly said. Cynthia wanted to teach her a lesson, so she pulled out her bear mace and sprayed it into the vehicle, spraying the victim directly in the face while she was seated inside. Sosa reportedly fled the scene, but was eventually pulled over by police and taken into custody. She was charged with 2 counts of aggravated battery and 1 count of burglary with assault or battery, which she'll have no time for. I thought the chickens in Key West were protected. If so, the impatient driver should also be fined and arrested for killing a protected animal and reckless driving.
Yep, Sosa. They better check her papers.
Sorry, but careless drivers like the driver killed the chicken are the same ones that kill people with those actions.
That's true.
It could have just as easily been a child with a ball. People are sick of that type of behavior and sick of people getting away with it without consequence. I wouldn't have attacked that other driver, but for Sosa, I understand it was the straw that broke the camel's back. Temporary insanity. There are very few who can't empathize with Sosa in today's world of extremely rash and narcissistic people who see no value in life or careful action. I'm on Sosa's side here. She's doing the right thing by saving life. The other driver is cruel, callous, and had a total disregard for life, choosing to kill an animal rather than wait maybe one whole minute.
She can't break the law just because someone else did that.
She's lucky all she got was maced. Would have served her right if she'd been run down like she chose to do to an innocent animal. Yeah, I mean, people were getting a little upset with that one, but yeah. Last one for the night.
Alright.
Thai woman, 35, filmed herself having sex with Buddhist monks and blackmailed them for millions of pounds. Now, this is one I want to actually show you, so we're going to...
see what she looked like. Oh, you found the videos. No.
A Thai woman was arrested on Tuesday after allegedly filming herself to having sex with Buddhist monks before blackmailing them for millions of pounds. I'm not going to pronounce her name. Known by the nickname Sika Goif. Sika Golf? Sika Golf. Sika Golf is what we're going to call it.
I'm sick of golf too. Hey, all these accused people hitting a ball around on the field.
Is accused of being involved in secret relationships with 13 monks, as well as money laundering and receiving stolen goods. First reported by Bangkok Biz. It's the Philippines. No, it's Taiwan. Bangkok. First reported by Bangkok Biz News, M. Sawit reportedly raked in an almost staggering 9 million.
Bangkok in Taiwan.
Thailand.
Yeah. You said Taiwan.
I said Taiwan, I meant Thailand. I got one. Hey, look, I was a little close. I'll let just a little off, all right? Okay. So, 5 mobile devices owned by the woman contain clips and stills of her engaged in sexual acts with several monks, some of whom were still wearing their traditional orange robes. Wow. Currently, 9 out of 13 monks involved have been disrobed, and the number of individuals involved is expected to increase. A committee in the Senate has now called for sex with monks to be made a crime, but the proposal has angered those who say the men should be held responsible for their own actions. The scandal exposes a system of lies and hypocrisy among top monks. Women have long been depicted in mainstream teachings as enemies of monks' spiritual purity. And now when the clergy's moral decay is in full view, it's the woman who takes the fall while the monks are cast as victims.
Was that the woman?
That's the woman.
I'll tell you what. Try to blackmail me. Go ahead and tell everyone that I've been sleeping with you.
But they're monks. They have a lot of pull within the religious community.
Well, they shouldn't be breaking their vows.
Yeah, that's true. The storm erupted when the highly respected abbot suddenly renounces monkhood and vanished across the border into Laos. But the real reason for his mysterious exit soon emerged. The 53-year-old monk had allegedly been in a secret relationship with Welawan, who claimed to be pregnant and demanded a huge 170,000 euros from him. When he refused to pay, she exposed their affair to fellow monks and he fled the country in disgrace. Since police seized Welawan's phone, some monks have already confessed to being involved in long-standing affairs with her, a blatant violation of their sacred vow of celibacy. Wow. All are now expected to be derobed in accordance with Buddhist laws. Since the situation came to light, one monk has even openly admitted that Welawan had gifted him a car during their secret romance. But the things turned sour when he discovered she was also involved with another monk. When he confronted her, she allegedly began blackmailing him for money. Investigators from Thailand CIB believe this scandal stretches far beyond moral failings and may involve large-scale financial corruption. Records from Willowan's bank accounts reportedly show a jaw-dropping 8.8 million in transactions over the past 3 years. Authorities suspect a significant portion of that came from temple funds. Willowan is also said to have blown huge sums on illegal gambling sites online. Police Major General, not pronouncing that man's name, who is leading the investigation, said his team is meticulously reviewing each video to identify monastic unchastity. Whoever violates the monastic code must disrobe, he said firmly. We want to preserve the public trust in Buddhism. It's a human weakness, but one we cannot ignore. The scandal has triggered soul searching across Thailand, a predominantly Buddhist nation, where monks are expected to live in humble purity, but critics say the institution has lost its way. Respected columnist Ekakai wrote, monks must ask themselves, why do they enter monkhood? For spiritual training or to climb the social ladder and gain wealth and power through the saffron robe? This is the structural rut rooted in a clergy strong on authoritarian control but weak on monastic discipline. It's the bitter fruit of a system that has drifted far from the Buddhist path. The case has sent shockwaves through the Buddhist world and raised urgent questions about transparency, discipline, and growing cracks beneath the surface of Thailand's religious elite. Wow. That is crazy. Absolutely crazy. Can't even trust these damn monks anymore.
Yep. Especially the Taiwan ones. Much less the Thailand ones.
Right.
I guarantee you, though. Of all the things...
We'll do this like one later.
I don't know what the punishment in Buddhism or the reward. I don't believe there is
right
a heaven in it.
I know there. It's different. You know, it's different. Okay. So, all right, guys. We'll see you next time on the Grim Articles show.
Later.
Enjoy the decline.